Chapter 6. Jackman and Marie had missed the 4 o'clock meeting, but the whole team was still in the CID room. Gary Pritchard, who had gone to talk to Chris Key's parents, looked preoccupied.
"Fill us in, Gary," said Jackman, taking a spare chair next to Marie.
"Not the happiest experience, as you can imagine, sir. I'm not sure how officers like Lucy Wells can do that sort of thing all day, every day," he sighed. "Basically, Christopher, age 24, was one of three siblings, two boys and a girl. All were living at home. He'd never been in trouble prior to the incident involving Kirsty Harcourt. He had a decent job with a local double glazing company until it closed a few months ago, and recently he'd been doing several part-time jobs, including working at the theatre."
"Happy family life?" asked Jackman.
"Pretty average, I'd say, boss. Not well off, but they were managing. The Harcourt investigation obviously caused them a great deal of distress. Oh, and the teenage girl has some sort of developmental problems, which is another source of worry."
"Did the family give an indication of what they believe had happened when Kirsty died?" asked Murray.
"We didn't get into too much detail, Sarge. They were well cut up and it was all pretty fraught. The mother swears he was not even in the car at the time, but then I suppose she would. He never came up with a proper alibi, so..."
Gary shrugged.
"We'll most likely never know. Lucy mentioned to me that the little sister did say something rather odd."
Jackman looked at him.
"Oh?"
"Lucy suspects she has a form of autism. She lacks certain social skills. She has no consideration for others' sensibilities. You know, can't tell a white lie."
"What? Like if someone asked her, 'Does my bum look big in this?' she'd probably answer, 'Yes, bloody massive,'" asked Charlie Button.
"Nicely put, Charlie. Lucy managed to talk to the girl and her older brother and asked them about Chris and the accident. Apparently, she said, 'How should I know when I wasn't there?' But he was driving the car a lot that day because his best friend had been ditched by his girlfriend and was drunk. Do you think they'll let me have Chris's room now? He's gone. It's bigger than mine."
"Phew," Marie let out a breath.
"Plain speaking like that must be hard to live with."
"And it rather indicates that his mate might have been the hit-and-run driver and Chris was protecting him by not speaking up," said Jackman thoughtfully.
"Still, as Gary had said, they might never know for sure."
"Thanks, Gary. Now, anything else before we call it a day?"
He looked around. No response.
"Then I suggest you all head off home. We'll start early tomorrow, and I don't have to tell you all to be vigilant. Anything out of the ordinary, anything bothering any of you, please shout. Ashcroft is here somewhere, so be on your guard and stay safe." He stood up. "Now, bugger off home."
Charlie Button collected his things, but instead of leaving, made his way downstairs to the back office.
"Is Kev around?"
he asked the gathered officers.
"Saw his car pulling in a few moments ago," one of them said.
Charlie went out to the reception and saw Kevin talking to his sergeant. He waited until they had finished and called to him.
"Kev, I need a favour."
Kevin Stoner grinned at him. "Better be quick because I'm coming upstairs next week, joining you lot."
"I heard, that's really great."
Charlie clapped him on the shoulder.
"Well done."
"Thanks, mate."
"So, what's the problem?"
asked Kevin. Charlie explained his dilemma. Kevin had to think about it.
"I know a couple of idiots that are more than capable of messing up a caper like that.
I'll pay them a call and let you know, okay?"
Jackman watched them all leave, and the anxiety began to build again. He knew what Ashcroft was capable of. He and those he loved had been on the receiving end of Ashcroft's evil tactics in the past, and now he had all the more reason to worry. For the first time, he had a personal life, and it was precious to him. He had come to realize that he wasn't quite the loner he had believed he was. He had always considered himself to be a solitary soul, living for his work and destined to end his days alone in Mill Corner with a horse and a couple of dogs. Now he had Laura. He was happy. He had plans, one of them being the renovation of the old mill. His only regret was that Marie was still alone. She had once told him that she was still married to Bill, her husband who had died,
and she would have felt she was being unfaithful if she formed a relationship with anyone else. That was sad. If only his friend would allow herself to be happy again. Jackman wondered if he should go and check in with Ruth Crook before he left, then decided that he'd leave it till morning. Mrs. Maynard, his daily help, had promised to leave them one of her special cottage pies, and after this awful day, all he wanted was to eat some home-cooked food, drink a glass of wine with Laura, and shut out the world. Marie coasted into her driveway, killed the engine and patted the tank of her lovely new bike. This beauty was the most expensive and exciting motorcycle she'd ever owned, and Marie was proud of her. After Ashcroft's attack on her, in which Harvey had been trashed, she had considered lighter, sportier models, but after she'd recovered from her injuries, she made up her mind to treat herself. She had chosen an adventure bike, built for both off- and on-road riding. She had finally opted for a Triumph, a Tiger 12 XRT in scarlet and black, and she could not have been happier with it. She pulled off her helmet and shook out her long dark brown hair. Should she take advantage of the beautiful evening and go for a ride? After a hard day, the speed and freedom were a tonic. The exhilaration cleared her mind. Leaving the bike on the drive, she went inside to check for messages, make herself a quick cup of tea, and then decide whether to go back out or not. A message from her mother. Marie smiled. She always looked forward to talking with her mother. She took her favourite mug, the one bearing the motto, "Only bikers understand why dogs stick their heads out of car windows," made her tea, and took it through to her conservatory. Her mother answered almost immediately. "Hello, darling. I've been thinking about you all day. How is everything?" She always knew when Marie was worried or having a bad day. "We've had a murder here in town. A man was shot." "And are you working the case?" Marie always found her mother's attempt at police speak amusing. "Yes, Mum. Jackman is SIO. Our team is investigating." There was a slight pause. Marie knew exactly what was coming next. "There's something else too, isn't there?" Her mum always knew. "Yes, Mum. We've had a message from Alistair Ashcroft. Nothing specific. He's just letting us know he's still around." "I see. Marie, should I come up for a few days?" "There's nothing I'd like more, but not now. I'd be terrified all the time about you being here alone." "Ah, but I wouldn't be alone. You see, I now have Lloyd." Marie screwed up her forehead in puzzlement. "Lloyd? Lloyd who?" "Doesn't have a surname. Lloyd is a German shepherd dog, darling. His owner had to go into a nursing home after a long illness, and he had no one to take him in." Besides working tirelessly for a dozen charities, her mother made time for anyone who needed her. Despite all she did, her mother spent a lot of time alone, and if not, in the company of the homeless and the addicted, and Marie worried about how vulnerable she was. A large dog was a very good thing to have by your side.
"Good for you, Mum.
So, what about that visit? I think it's about time, don't you?"
"I'd love to say yes, Mum. But if you had the dog and an SAS team surrounding you, I'd still be shit scared of letting you out of my sight. Let's make a date for as soon as we've nailed this psycho."
"Consider me unconvinced, but I'll let it go for tonight." She paused. "Just ring me every day. I haven't forgotten what happened to you last time. You're my only daughter, and I need to know you're safe."
"I promise. Although I can't say what time it'll be, I'm afraid."
"Of course, no problem. I just need to hear your voice. And your voice, Marie. None of those text thingies."
"Received and understood, Mum."
"Good. Now I'm off to feed my new baby. Night-night, my darling."
As Marie set the phone back into its cradle, something dropped through the letterbox. Junk mail, probably. She went to the front door and saw a plain white envelope lying on the mat. The warm feeling that her mother's call had given her was instantly replaced with disquiet. Her chest tightened. She bent down and opened it. Another photo, again of her and Jackman,
this time sitting in a car in town. There was no message. Marie dropped the picture and flung the door open. There, legging it up the road, was the lanky figure of a youth. She ran after him. He turned the corner at the bottom of the road and headed for a lane that led to the village green. Marie was in good shape, but he was young and remarkably fast. Even so, after a few minutes, she began to gain on him. All at once, he veered to the side and headed straight for a high fence. As he leapt, Marie grabbed at his jacket. For a moment, she thought she'd had him, but he slipped out of her grasp, leaving her holding a grubby sleeveless hoodie, while he scrambled over the fence and was gone. Out of breath, Marie trudged slowly back to her house. At least he hadn't damaged her new bike. Then she noticed something that hadn't been there before. Dangling from the hand grip was a small wreath of artificial flowers. She peered at it without touching it. A handwritten card was attached. It read, "Lest we forget." Marie heaved in a deep breath. It would probably be a waste of time and money, but she called in and asked for Socko to be dispatched to her address. It was the second communication from Ashcroft in one day. She couldn't ignore it. It would appear the bastard really meant business this time. She stood outside her home, staring at that silly, sinister plastic wreath, and made another call. "Gary, remember what you asked me this afternoon? Well, I've had a change of heart."